Having taught ECG and arrhythmia interpretation over the past 40 plus years, it dawned on me that there are a number of things clinicians do that are counterproductive to time-efficient ECG interpretation, while at the same time also being counterproductive to achieving optimal accuracy. For the purpose of this audio pearl, I'll take the liberty of calling these actions by clinicians errors to ensure that I capture your attention. I'll emphasize that my comments purely reflect my personal opinion based on my observations from teaching medical professionals from all medical fields and of all levels of competency, ranging from complete beginners to seasoned clinicians with years of on-the-job experience. The first error that I'll comment on is the failure to use a systematic approach. Regardless of user experience, the failure to use some kind of system, both for rhythm as well as 12-lead interpretation, is alarmingly common in my experience. Why do I call the failure to routinely use some sort of system an error? My answer to this is simply that without regular use of some kind of system, it not only takes the clinician longer to interpret the tracing, but without a system, even experienced clinicians miss important findings. This is because their attention jumps to the obvious finding, say the acute infarction, without ever realizing that the rhythm is not sinus. So interpreters who don't follow a specific system are less accurate, whether they admit it or not, because they do not consider all diagnostic possibilities. So why do I say these interpreters are also slower? After all, they come up with the most obvious diagnosis within seconds of seeing the tracing. The reason these interpreters who do not have a system that they use with every tracing, the reason these interpreters are slower is their tendency to go around in circles as they assess a tracing. For example, they immediately see the obvious infarct, they then look at a few other parameters, and then because they don't have a system, it's all too easy to forget what they have or have not covered. Let me comment on a number of errors specifically related to this failure to routinely use a system, beginning with the first thing to do when interpreting any 12-lead ECG, which is to find a long lead rhythm strip on the patient. Ideally, this will be found under the 12-lead, and simultaneously recorded with the 12-lead to enable comparison of morphology in all 12 leads for each beat in the entire rhythm strip. But I realize that many pre-hospital systems do not routinely have the capability of recording a simultaneous long lead to rhythm strip. So use whatever you have. The key is to find a long lead rhythm strip, to spend the 3 to 4 seconds it takes to look in front of each QRS complex to see if each QRS is preceded by a P wave. The advantage of using a lead 2 to accomplish this is that if an upright P wave with constant PR interval is not found in front of each QRS in a lead 2 recording, then assuming you don't have lead misplacement or dextrocardia, if there is no upright P wave in front of each QRS, then the rhythm is something other than sinus. The reason this initial step is important is that because the rhythm will be sinus in the overwhelming majority of cases, we become immune and almost routinely assume that the rhythm will be sinus, almost without looking, or looking but not really seeing. If it is part of your system that with each and every ECG that you ever see, that you look in a long lead 2 to verify that there are upright P waves in front of each QRS, then you will not overlook non-sinus rhythms. If you don't do this, I guarantee, whether you admit it or not, that you are overlooking some non-sinus rhythms, which at times may be very important to optimal clinical management. Which system to use? There are many systems, and each has its merits. I really do not care which system you use, mine or someone else's, as long as you are aware of those system features that must be included in whatever systematic approach you choose to use. For rhythm interpretation, after you've ensured that the patient is hemodynamically stable, the 5 parameters that need to be included in your interpretation are looking for P waves or for other signs of atrial activity, such as flutter waves, seeing if the QRS is wide, determining if the rhythm is regular, figuring out the rate, looking at both atrial and ventricular rates if these are different, and if P waves are present, determining if P waves are related to neighboring QRS complexes. I remember these 5 parameters by watching my P's, Q's, and the 3 R's, looking for P waves, QRS width, rate and regularity of the rhythm, and if P waves are related to neighboring QRS complexes. Using this type of a system allows you to accurately describe the rhythm within seconds. An example of such a description might be to say that the rhythm is a regular wide tachycardia at 150 per minute, or whatever the rate might be, with or without clear sign of atrial activity. And once you've described the rhythm in this manner, with assessment of the P's, Q's, and 3 R's, it becomes much easier to determine the precise rhythm diagnosis, as I'll discuss next. So the next error that I want to describe is the feeling that you have to come up with a definitive answer. For example, providers often feel that they have to say on the spot whether wide tachycardia is VT or SVT, that they have to give an either-or answer. This rhythm is VT or this rhythm is an SVT. I think that's the wrong answer. Every ECG diagnosis is a relative probability statement, and what that relative probability is makes up an important part of your answer. But your systematic approach has made this easy, because in a matter of seconds, you've been able to determine if you are dealing with a wide or narrow tachycardia, at what rate, and with or without what type of atrial activity. So a much better answer, in my opinion, than premature closure that reaches a one-word conclusion, such as VT or SVT, is to simply describe what you see. For example, I see a regular wide tachycardia at 180 per minute without clear sign of atrial activity and with QRS morphology that does not resemble any known conduction defect. Therefore, most probably VT, with need to treat accordingly until proven otherwise. Beyond the scope of this brief audio pearl are all the intricacies that favor VT versus some sort of supraventricular tachycardia. I'll leave links to material that assists in this differentiation in today's blog post. But awareness that before you even begin to look at the ECG of a regular wide tachycardia without clear sign of atrial activity, that at least 80% of such rhythms are VT. Awareness of this allows you to predict relative odds of VT from your P's, Q's, 3R description. The related error? Since the odds for a regular wide tachycardia so strongly favor VT, the provider needs to assume VT until proven otherwise, and not the other way around. Many providers, when they see a wide tachycardia with an upright QRS and lead V1 with slight resemblance to a right bundle branch block pattern, assume aberrant conduction, which is an error. Even when the R-wave is upright and lead V1, assume VT until proven otherwise. A related error to what we've just discussed is failure to appreciate that there are a limited number of possibilities. For example, if you've determined the rhythm is a regular SVT, that is narrow complex tachycardia, at say 150 per minute without clear sign of P-waves, then by overwhelming odds you are dealing with one of four possible rhythms, which are sinus tachycardia, in which sinus P waves are hidden within preceding T waves, atrial flutter, atrial tachycardia, or a reentry SVT rhythm such as AVNRT or AVRT. And that's about it. And it helps to know this. Related errors are the failure to appreciate that you may not be able to know with certainty what the rhythm is at the time that you need to begin treatment, and that this is not only okay, but that it is very common in practice that you have to begin treatment measures before you have such certainty. Finally, there's a failure to appreciate the need for a multifaceted approach for arriving at a final diagnosis. Does the patient have previous tracings that you can compare with the current tracing, which can be especially helpful when the QRS is wide, and you want to see if on previous tracings the patient had the same wide QRS morphology during sinus rhythm? Also, repeating the ECG may be insightful, especially if the patient converts to sinus rhythm, either spontaneously or following your intervention. Repeat the ECG, as comparison post-conversion with the tracing during tachycardia may reveal a definitive answer.